Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. I'm Darren Hefty. My brother Brian is out on the road today. He'll be joining us as well. We're going to talk about soil organic matter on today's program. We've got a really interesting way to take a look at that too, both with, well, how does tillage impact it? How about cover crops? What's going on with microbiology and things that we can apply to our field? So a lot of different ways to take a crack at soil organic matter. We'll also be talking to farmers across the country and taking your calls and agronomic questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. All right, Brian, what are you seeing today? What are you learning?
Well, let's talk about our topic, soil organic matter. There are a couple of things that drive me crazy. And one is how people will say, oh, there's a nitrogen credit for soybeans. Yeah, there's no such thing as a nitrogen credit for soybeans. Sometimes after a soybean crop, you might have 100 pounds left for your corn crop the next year, or wheat, or whatever you're raising. And other years, you have almost nothing. This year, we tested in our soils. It's the lowest level we've ever found. We had all kinds of rain. We had good yields. There's just not much left after the soybean. So there isn't a whole bunch that's going to magically appear next year. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, with soil organic matter, you've got to account for that nitrogen that's going to come available out of that. Now, it all depends on where you live. If you're in Canada and you're cold, you're not going to get as much as what I'm going to talk about here. But on our farm, for example, I'm going to figure at least 20 pounds of nitrogen for every 1% of soil organic matter. We have some of our ground we got built up to 5% organic matter. That's 100 pounds of free nitrogen we're going to get for our crop every year. It's awesome. That's one of the big things that people do not talk about with soil organic matter, and I think that's one of the most important things. Not only that, but you're going to get a little bit of phosphate and some sulfur out of there, too. We usually figure about 4 pounds of phosphate for every 1% of organic matter and 1 pound of sulfur for every one, for every 1% of organic matter. So, you know, it's just one of these things where a lot of people have been misled into thinking that, oh, just because I raised soybeans last year, that automatically means I got a bunch of nitrogen left over. No, it doesn't. That's the first thing. But then secondly, if you're not accounting for soil organic matter and how much nitrogen release there is, and by the way, we normally figure 20 pounds. Some years we get 25 to 30 pounds out for every 1% of organic matter. It's incredible. So it's possible that you may be over-fertilizing or under-fertilizing your nitrogen if you don't take these two things into account.
Well, there's a lot of things that come into play. And we get, you know, so many questions around this topic, especially when we get into the mineralization. I like how you started it here with the legumes and the nitrogen credit. There's a lot of misinformation there and just building a fertility program. I think if we have balanced fertility and know what we need to put out there and put the right things out in the field, we've got a much better shot of taking our soils forward and building organic matter with all the microbes that are going to be involved as well.
Definitely. And, you know, with soil organic matter, we've talked about the nutrient release that it has, but there are so many great things with soil organic matter. Think about it this way. It's kind of like making your soil into a little bit more of a sponge to absorb water and nutrients when you don't need them and release them when you need them. And then the other side of it is just compaction. So I'm driving through North Dakota today. I'm doing a couple of meetings up here in North Dakota. There are some really heavy soils, and unfortunately, there's a lot of compaction. But if you can build your soil organic matter, it lessens that impact. It lessens the chance for compaction. It's a really good thing. Plus, the more organic matter you have, you have a little bit better soil porosity, so you have a little bit better drainage. You get more air in the soil, more oxygen, which means, to your point, you're going to have some more soil microbes. So there are a lot of good things. I got a list a mile long of all the benefits to soil organic matter. We know it's great. It's just a lot of people struggle with how am I going to build soil organic matter, and that's where we start talking about reducing tillage, planting crops with lots of roots, using manure and compost, using biologicals, using cover crops, all those things can absolutely help.
You know, there are quite a few things there, but there's no silver bullet. There's no, well, hey, I'm just going to go to no-till and magically everything's going to be great in a year. It takes time to build things.
Yeah, it does, but there is kind of a silver bullet. No-till is, to some degree, what I would call a silver bullet if we're just simply talking about building soil organic matter. But I agree with you. Yeah, it's not, number one, you don't have to go no-till.
Let's look at it this way.
There are other things you could do to build the organic matter even faster. Like if I went no-till and I planted corn and I used cover crops and I used manure or compost and I used some biologicals, well, of course I'm going to build soil organic matter way faster than just going no-till.
That's what I'm getting at, and it's that next best decision of, okay, I'm going to reduce my tillage out there. That's a great decision if you're trying to build organic matter. Now the next thing is, what are you going to plant for a crop, and how are you going to fertilize that crop, and are you going to use a cover crop, and so on and so forth. There are just so many things that, okay, making one good move, and I agree with you, the tillage piece is huge, but you make that good move. If you don't make some of the other good moves, all of a sudden it negates some of that. If you say, well, my fertility plan is going to be, I'm just going to put a ton of nitrogen out there in hopes that that gets me a better crop, well, you could destroy some of that good thing that you're doing by building organic matter and so on and so forth. And, oh, yeah, I'm going to put a crop out there and I'm going to chop it for silage every year and I'm going to take everything off. There are just a lot of decisions that impact the next one too.
Yeah, absolutely. But, no, I think talking about soil organic matter is really important. It's just kind of like what you said. I don't care what you do. In 1 year, you're not going to make a leaps and bounds change. So this is very difficult to have this conversation when a guy says, well, I'm renting the ground, and I'm only going to have it for 1 year, maybe two. As opposed to when the farmer owns the ground, okay, well, over 20 years, we can make some enormous headway over 20 years and even over 10 years. But to think we're going to change a lot in a year or two, it's not going to happen.
You know, it's one of those things that Brian and I heard growing up. Well, you're not going to change your organic matter levels overnight, but the next thing you know, we've been farming for more than 20 years, and here we go. We're seeing some big changes in our soils just by making some of those decisions. So we want to encourage you on today's program to try and build your soil organic matter where you can, and we'll talk about the benefits and the challenges of doing that coming up on today's program. Stay tuned.
1 year it could be moisture stress, another Pythium or nematodes. So you need your soybeans to rise ready for whatever the season holds. Now one simple decision provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio, fungicides, insecticides, bioenhancers, and an industry-leading nematicide that strikes where nematodes attack. This season, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/riseready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
Hey, Bill, any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2save3.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy 2 Save 3 are trademarks owned by Amvac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? The Soil Warrior can reduce trips across the field, optimize nutrient placement, and improve soil health. So you can lower production costs without losing yield. See what makes the Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
Tired of that old warped poly boom ruining your spray applications? Express Boom from Hypro is a fully assembled stainless steel boom that ensures an even application of chemicals every time. Don't wait another season. Upgrade today. Hypro, helping you spray better.
Are you frustrated with white mold showing up year after year in your soybeans? If you have tried fungicide applications and are still losing yield to white mold, now is the time to ask your seed dealer about Heads Up Plant Protectant. Heads Up is the first EPA-registered seed treatment for the prevention of white mold in soybeans and pulse crops. The first line of defense on your farm against white mold now starts with the right seed treatment package. Locate a Heads Up dealer near you by visiting headsupst.com today.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. Our topic is soil organic matter. It makes a big difference on a lot of things in your program in terms of raising crops and soil fertility and so forth. So we got our friend Chris Larson with us. He's with Case IH. Chris, how are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you today, Darren?
Good. Good. All right. So soil organic matter building has been one of our strategies on our farm, and that doesn't mean we're completely exempt from doing tillage out there. But when we do the tillage, we want to be really smart about it. And you get lots of questions about this, I'm sure, for growers with highly erodible land or just growers that say, look, I need to reduce my tillage to try to raise my soil organic matter. What can I do to still be effective with my crop?
Yeah, that you're exactly right. You get a lot of questions, and there's a lot of you know, angles to that as far as a question. You know, you really got to look at your program and understand that you know, tillage in many cases has been looked at as the oil organic matter killer, but it, you know, that's rightly so. But also compaction is too, right? So you know, compaction management is still an important part of you know, improving and increasing your organic matter when you can manage that.
Let me give you an example, Chris. Brian is driving across the Red River Valley in North Dakota today. And yeah. He said, you know, here's ground zero for guys that generally have to deal with some pretty heavy ground and wet conditions. And I know across South Dakota this year and Minnesota and other states, we saw the same thing. We were wet at harvest time. A lot of compaction got created out there, and we certainly have to deal with that. That's probably your biggest question this winter, I'm guessing.
Yeah, you know, what are we going to do? And even, you know, like you guys, I farm as well, I've been on before, and you know, that a lot of compaction with grain carts and the traffic we put on the field. And you know, I don't know if we'll be able to get in with a ripper at all in the spring. It's normally not a great time to do it, but in some cases it might be the best choice for us in order to try to manage that and at least salvage something from those areas that we really had some heavy traffic to them.
Yeah, I hear a lot of farmers saying, well, I'm going to cover it up and I'll deal with it next fall because it can't be as wet next fall as it was this year. Is that a good strategy or should we just wait an extra week before we plant and get it fixed up now?
Well, I think that something is better than nothing. And if your strategy, it'll come down to a last-minute decision, I think, right? We can plan and probably have different strategies, you know, much like a football team, you probably have different strategies for different situations, you know, goal lines and those things. And I think the best opportunities there, if we can get out and rip, we will and should try to manage that. And, you know, if reducing that compaction, like I said, back to our main topic can you know, help us with that organic matter.
How do you see the agronomic design on a lot of the equipment that KSIH is bringing to the market deal with crop residue management and what part do you play there?
Well, I think, you know, products like, you know, vertical tillage tools, I use our vertical tillage tool from KSIH on the farm to incorporate cover crops. Those sorts of things are, you know, have come a long ways in helping improve organic matter and cover crops and incorporating those and incorporating manure that can also help us improve that. And, you know, all of the products, you know, with the EcoTill 2500, those tools that don't do a lot of surface disturbance but do remove compaction, so you're continuing to keep that structure above the surface, or excuse me, at the surface there, definitely can help us improve that. And of course, as I mentioned, the management of compaction and overall residue management is really important with you know, with sizing and being able to plant that crop. I think that's the other part is, you know, increasing the organic matter. We can get so focused on that maybe we forget about, you know, getting that seed in the right place. And soil preparation tools like Fuel Cultivator and such can help us improve that area to place that seed and get it off to the right start this spring.
Well, there's no question if we want to increase the productivity out in our fields, we've got to increase our production out there too. We've got to raise good crops to keep raising good crops down the road. So you're right. If we can't get a good seed placement out there, we've got to do something about that or we're going to have a failure. And all our good thoughts about, hey, I want to build the soil up are going to play into the next farmer that's farming that ground because we're not going to make it. Now, you mentioned the vertical tillage. You mentioned vertical tillage, Chris, and I want to hit on that one too because this is one I hear a lot of farmers say, look, I'm trying to reduce my impact on the soil out there, and vertical tillage seems to be the products of choice, and you've got a couple of products out there in the vertical tillage market. What should growers look for to pick a good one?
Well, you know, I think there's a couple things with vertical tillage that people are looking to do, and probably namely size residue is one. Two, leveling and creating a surface that is smooth. But also, more importantly for us, is creating a soil profile that's flat also below the surface. And, you know, really looking at a tool that can create all three of those is important for seed placement. Also, you know, breakdown of that residue and trying to move that so we do get good seed-to-soil contact when that planter does come through is important. And, you know, getting all three of those pieces is really what the vertical tillage tools from Case IH offer. And, you know, that's really the important parts for overall complementing seed placement and growth of that product or that crop throughout the season.
You know, there's some new products out there that are kind of in this same type of market, but it doesn't seem like we're getting that flat tillage bed underneath them. It's really variable, and we notice differences in our emergence. So that flat soil profile below the surface at the bottom of the tillage is really what I'm looking at on our farm and making sure that we're getting. What should growers be looking at in terms of settings or even considering some of these different pieces of equipment? Where does vertical tillage shine versus them?
Well, again, it depends on how deep. You know, we're looking at 1 to 3 inches with vertical tillage. Maybe some other tools, maybe high-speed discs and such, are a little deeper and create a really nice flat surface. But the subsurface just is quite compacted, and as you mentioned, creates issues maybe with root development and such as they go through life. If you're planting into that, you know, vertical tillage has that opportunity to hopefully reduce backside blade pressure, create that a good seedbed floor with our 335 VTs or the Barracudas that allow us to really create good root development and keep that plant healthy throughout the season.
When we're out looking at problems in fields, so often it traces back to that first tillage pass in the spring. What do you advise guys? My dad used to look at, when he would walk in the field, he figured out how many pounds per square inch he was putting on his shoes. And I don't know if many of us want to do that. That might be embarrassing. But what's your gauge? I mean, do you just look at fields and know if it's ready? Because we find too many guys pushing it and get out there too quick.
Yeah, it gets to be a lot of the feel, all right? I mean, my gauge often is actually my planter. Would I be comfortable putting my planter in this condition? And like for the early riser, many times it comes down to the soil buildup on the press wheel. And if it's building up a little too much, it's probably not a great condition for that. And, you know, clod sizing and those will certainly tell you as well. And in the soils of you know, Iowa and in your neck of the woods, you know, we're blessed with high organic matter. We're blessed with soil types that you know, break down and create a good clod size. We have to deal with clays and such. Maybe where I'm at actually right now in Ohio, they're dealing with a little bit different soil types. So the wetness really probably plays a lot more factor when you get to those forest clay-based soils out east. But in any case, it comes down to maybe just trying it. And if you're getting a pretty cloddy condition and you have an opportunity maybe to try her tomorrow, probably a good idea to do so.
Yeah, it's tough to make those calls in the spring sometimes, especially when you've got a brother as patient as me, Chris. I'm sure nobody else has that in their operation. We got to go, Darren. We got to go. We got to get a lot done, but we want to do the job right. So we really appreciate the advice today. We've been speaking with Chris Larson with Case IH. And Chris, I know you're going to have a challenge on your farm in the spring just like we are. So good luck.
Yeah, you too. I appreciate it. And good luck to everybody out there. Be safe this spring, please.
Talking about soil organic matter on today's program, and started with tillage a little bit, but we're going to look at some other things going on with soil microbes, both in furrow and on seed, and what we can do to help influence what's going on in our soil, and also look at cover crops. We've got a leading expert from around the country here on cover crops that's coming up later in the show too. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
No secrets here. We all know, regardless of the markets, balanced crop nutrition pays. Agro-liquid fertilizers have the research, technology, and products you need to grow a great crop We also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. AgroLiquid can help you maximize your yield potential effectively and economically. Visit agroliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
In order to be the best farmer you can be, you've got to have a grain marketing plan. But what do you do when you're too busy out in the fields trying to maximize yield? Hi, I'm Darren Hefty. My brother Brian and I are always busy learning more about how to make our farm more successful. That's why we use Grain PhD to learn more about grain marketing and to work with our Grain PhD risk expert to create a complete grain marketing strategy. Visit grainphd.com to learn more about a free consultation for your operation.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Want to turn smart agronomics into smart economics? Go with the all-new Grow Smart Rewards program. 1. Start with a smart agronomic plan. 2. Qualify with the purchase of a participating BASF herbicide. 3. Earn $1+ per acre for each qualifying pair-up brand. Plus, you may qualify for an additional $75 per gallon back on our industry-leading fungicides. For full program details, go to growsmartrewards.com. Grow smart with BASF.
When you build with Morton Buildings, you build something that lasts. And now you can build for less during Building Value Days. If you're dreaming of a personal storage building, horse barn, farm storage, home, office, insulated workshop, or even a commercial facility, take advantage of our discounted pricing on new buildings now through February 28, 2019. So don't delay. Visit MortonBuildings.com for more information.
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
Hey everybody, come on in. The Ag PhD mailbag is about to begin.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. You hear the mailbag music there. That means we've got some mailbag questions we want to jump into as well. We're talking about soil organic matter on today's program, and we talked about the tillage aspect a little bit, but also a nutrient component comes in there. And we got a question. This one's from Aaron in Nebraska. He said, you talked about applying some of your micronutrients one at a time with the spreader. What spreader have you found that can spread a low rate with a good pattern? Hey, thanks, Aaron. We really appreciate that. We've got a single fan spinner spreader, and I know right away that's going to raise some eyebrows of, oh, wait a minute, you need two fans and all this. But if you actually look at the data, you can set a single fan to do a pretty nice job. We've been doing that. We can run down to 20 pounds per acre as a low rate, and we can do that reliably. So that's what I would do. I don't think you can find anything cheaper to be able to do that. Obviously, it's more work going one micro at a time. So what we've done in a lot of fields is found a blended micro that had pretty high rates, high concentrations of a broad spectrum of micronutrients. And then we've looked at our soils and figured out what rate we can run as to not be excessive in any single micro. So we've raised all of the micro levels up to a certain point. And then after that, we look at, okay, now certainly we hit one of them. Maybe it was zinc that we've got up to as far as we want. Now we go back out and deal with manganese or copper or whatever micronutrient we had. So that's what I would do. We just haven't had much problem with that. We can do variable rate as we go across the field down to 20 pounds on the low end, or we can just do a flat rate if we've got pretty consistent numbers. And like on boron, for example, we found relative consistency across our fields in terms of a lot of the fields were in the 0.5 parts per million to 0.8 parts per million. So if we wanted to raise it up, say, to 2 parts per million, we could do that with a flat rate. So maybe something to consider too. I guess you can send us soil samples if you'd like us to look at anything specifically. Aaron, thank you so much. Really appreciate the question. Yeah, we get a lot of fertility questions on the show, and I've got some soil samples to take a look at too. I got one here, for example, from Randy in Illinois. He said, love your show. I've been to some of your soil clinics before, but need a little help on one of my soil tests. This one, we're doing some variable rate fertilizing with, and you can see we've got 7 different samples there. Wonder if you'd give me some recommendations on getting this built up. In 2018, we had 145 bushel corn, and we put on some lime at 2 tons per acre in the fall of 2017. Wondering what else we could do. We're going to put soybeans out here in 2019. We're going to plan on 30-inch rows, 120,000 population. Okay, well, thanks for the question, Randy. And you know, looking at your soil test, I just start at soil pH all the time. And, you know, the lime thing is interesting. And you said you got some lime out there in the fall of 2017. I'm curious where your pH was at that point, because we've still got some grids as low as 5.2 and 5.5. And then we've got some others that are 5.9 and 6.1. And if we started at the low fives and we've already got those almost up to where we want to be at 6.2, 6.3, something like that, I don't want to put any more lime in those spots. So it's just one of those things. I guess the pH, I would like that to be higher, but maybe your lime is still going to be working here over the next couple of years to bring things up. So I'm going to leave that pH decision up to you. If you think, hey, I'm moving in the right direction already, so it's probably all going to play out fine. The next thing I look at is potassium. We've got a cation exchange capacity on your soil of somewhere in the 8 to 10 range. So it's, you know, a little lighter, but not super light. And we could definitely hold some potassium. Our parts per million are in the 40 to 80 range. We need that to be considerably higher. So I would definitely try and build up my base saturation by applying some K. We can get that rate up to 7 or 8% even in those areas. I'd want to be at least at 4, but then you're still going to have to deliver more K to your crop. So I would work on building that up towards the 7 to 8 range. Your magnesium's almost ideal. Your calcium's probably coming up as your lime gets working. So you should be in good shape there. Then I look over at your soil phosphorus, and we're down in the mostly in the 3 to 5 parts per million range. So we need a lot of phosphorus out there. So again, you're going to have to feed everything your crop needs for K and for phosphorus. And I'd look not only at what it's going to remove this year, I'd look at the total, because you're going to definitely need more to have good, healthy stocks. Your sulfur levels are okay, but we probably need a little bit more. And certainly with the micros, we're going to have to address some of those as well. It looks like zinc is dramatically low, and he didn't run a boron test, so I'd be curious to see that, and we should need some manganese too. So we got quite a few things to do. Hopefully that lime gets kicking in for you to get your pH up the rest of the way. Thanks a lot, Randy. Really appreciate the question today. All right, let's go back to the phone lines here. Real happy to have Jennifer Riggs with us. She's a Seed Solutions Product Development Manager with BASF. Jennifer, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
You know, you've got a product that's going to be on a lot of acres, and we've gotten quite a few calls on the Poncho Votivo 2.0. Can you talk a little about that and what kind of impact we'll see on plant health?
Yeah, thanks. It's great to be able to, you know, talk about our newest innovation. Poncho, you know, it's been around for quite a while in the marketplace. Growers have certainly understand the value it brings as an insecticide. And then a few years ago, we added the Votivo component that brought you some plant growth promotion as well as some nematode protection. But we're so excited to bring the next stage of the Poncho Votivo family, which is Poncho Votivo 2.0. And what that does is again, it's all as a seed treatment. You get the same protection from the first two, the Poncho and the Votivo. But with 2.0, what we're doing is we're really providing that soil around your corn roots a little bit of a healthy advantage. So 2.0 is unique in that it's delivered on the seed. And what we're doing is we're delivering a bacteria that's able to able to produce an enzyme, which is just a simple protein. And what that enzyme does is acts as a personal trainer for your seed treatment, because that enzyme kind of feeds the native microbes that are there. So it's just like looking at when you and I get good and full, we can be more active than if we're starving. And so 2.0, what it does is it's able to bring some food to the native microbes around that soil root that helps pump that nutrient cycling, making your organic matter more efficient. I think all our growers know how important organic matter is to their fields. And one of the things that's really hard to do is that you can't build up organic matter very quickly. It's not like you can just go out there and one day you're at one level and another day you're at a higher level. So what Pontivativa 2.0 does is actually help optimize the efficiency of the organic matter you have in your soil. And so what that does combined with Poncho and Vativo, you see a healthier plant early in the season. We've seen increased microbial activity all the way at V5 to V7, all the way through tassel time. And with that, we are seeing an increased yield benefit for the growers at the end of the season. And we see this across a wide geography, so across many, many different types of corn hybrids that we tested. So it's really exciting to say that we've brought, you know, insect protection, and then we brought nematode protection, some plant growth, but then now we're bringing that little bit of a soil health aspect to right around that corn root.
You know, you mentioned you can't change soil organic matter levels overnight, but you can certainly influence what's going on right around that seed and root zone. And I think that's really key here. And it looks to me like a product where growers are getting a little bit more than what they're expecting to get.
Yeah, so we did this last season. We did a follow a grower program, and it's really exciting to be able to follow them. There's some videos out there, and these growers were able to see an immediate increase in the root structure. When I say immediate, I'm talking about in the first 2 weeks, digging up that seed and looking at it compared to the non-Pontivativa 2.0, seeing a really nice, strong root system that helped carry that through. And for me as a researcher, it's really exciting to say every one of the growers we followed had a significant yield increase, somewhere in that 5 bushel per acre yield range on top of what they would have normally seen just with Pontivativa alone. So 2.0 is really doing that nice job of bringing that additional value. You know, we're not trying to do something that the other two are already doing. We're bringing that third component, that third type of mode of action. And really and truly, it all works in sync with each other, because a healthier plant from the pest protection, you have a bigger root system. With that bigger root system, that more efficient nutrient cycling and getting nutrients into that plant.
That's three things working all together. Jennifer Riggs with BASF, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on. We'll be right back.
Your grain bin fans can cost you a lot. High electric bills from running when conditions are not ideal, shrinkage from overdried grain, and spoiled grain all take money out of your pocket. With the Steps GMS app temperature humidity switch, get your bin fans to start making you money. Only run fans when the conditions are right. Eliminate shrink and spoilage in your bins. Deliver grain in top condition at market moisture. When every dollar counts, you need Steps GMS. Contact us today at stepsgms.com. What do you think of when you hear Palmer Amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean field, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer Amaranth. Take control of your soybean field and get rewarded with Roundup Ready Plus when you choose the proven power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic has proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike incentive programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. You decide what's best for your operation, from pre-plant to harvest. Your retailer and FMC take care of the rest. It's really that simple. the exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing of the FMC Freedom Pass program make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. That's what we mean when we say we give you more freedom in the field. You'll experience more control and confidence, too. Generics and imitators can't promise that. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutex EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutex EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutex EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting for the Morton Studio today. Been talking about soil organic matter. We'll continue that discussion here in just a minute, but I got a little feedback here. This is from Vlad, and he said, wanted to comment on jar testing. He said, I broadcast micronutrients with my sprayer. That's mixing zinc sulfate, solubor, which is a boron source. Some iron sulfate was left in my tank from a previous spray. And when I added the solubor to the mix, my water turned dark gray. And I'm wondering, did it tie up my nutrients? I had jar tested zinc sulfate and solubor. They were compatible. But now with that mix of iron sulfate in the tank, things didn't work out so good. Yeah, it's just super important that you do jar test. And you know, in terms of tying up nutrients, I don't see that as being an issue by mixing those together. But if you can't get it out through the sprayer accurately, that can be a problem. We've done a lot of single micros, and I think I talked about it earlier in today's program, actually, that sometimes we'll just go out a single micro at a time just so we can do variable rate. But once you're mixing multiple things together, then you're kind of stuck with you can vary the rate of the entire mix, but it's going to make it a little more challenging in terms of that and also in terms of the mixing. One of the things that we found, too, we've got really hard well water, lots of iron and lots of calcium in it at our farm. And if we're using our well water, sometimes we can have some issues with things mixing up, especially when we get two or three things in the mix. So yeah, it might be just one of those things of, hey, if you're going to do boron, you might want to mix that separately or just do it with your zinc sulfate. Like you said, you had jar tested and those worked, but the three-way mix just definitely didn't. So I'm not so worried about the tie-up of nutrients. I think you're probably okay there. But I am worried about that mixing and just getting an accurate spray made. Hey, Vlad, thanks for sharing that. We really appreciate that. I got one from John here in Indiana. He said, most farmers in my area refuse to use gray-stemmed soybeans. They claim the standability and shattering are not as good as the brown or red-stemmed soybeans. In the past, I've always blown that off as kind of a visual thing and just a preference from the combine cab of liking the darker or brighter-looking beans. But after several side-by-sides this year, the plants that had brown stems did have an advantage in those things in my area. We've got some highly eroded clay soils and that I would compare to reclaimed ground. What's your thoughts on the gray-stemmed soybeans versus a tawny pubescence, or as some will call it, a brown or a red-stemmed bean? Great question, John. You know, there definitely is a difference visually, and from the road, I think you get those, as you would call them, red beans that are really a bright color, and it looks nice. It really does. I talk to a lot of farmers that say, man, if I can choose and I've got similar characteristics, similar yield, I'm going to take that one because it looks sharp and my landlord likes it. My neighbors think it looks great. You know, this kind of thing. It looks like I'm doing a better job. There was a difference back, oh, probably a generation ago with breeders where they really pushed to have darker stems as you move further north, trying to get more sunlight to absorb in those stems to try to get them to finish off a little better. Now we see such a mix. There's gray-stemmed soybeans all across the country. There's dark tawny ones across the country as well. So I guess it kind of comes down to the individual variety and what the characteristics are. There are some that you would call light tawny that are somewhere in between. And it seems like to me in our area, the light tawny ones a lot of times are carrying more yield. But the standability thing, that's interesting. And the ease of harvest, if you're noticing ease of harvest is better with one versus the other, that may be a factor that you like. So, yeah, I can't say that I've made the exact same observation as you have in our area on our soil types, but there definitely are some differences between the gray stems and the darker stems too. Hey, thanks a lot, John. I didn't really have a great answer for you, just that I hadn't seen the exact same thing, but it is good to make those observations on your farm and then make your product choices based on your observations in your area too. Got a question here. This one is from Thomas, and he said, I'm wondering about some ag law. Uh-oh, legal question. Okay, first of all, Thomas, I am not a lawyer, so I would say consult the lawyer on anything that's going to be legal, but I'll give you an opinion here in just a second. Thomas said, I'm wondering if you know the rule about farm machinery riding on the shoulder of the road. I was recently transporting one of our tractors to our other farm and had a lot of people honking at me, including our highway superintendent, because I didn't pull over to let traffic pass, as I didn't feel it was safe to do so. I also know that it's illegal to pass farm equipment in a no-passing zone. Thank you for your time, and any information or help would be appreciated. All right, Thomas, first of all, you're supposed to drive on the road, period. When you start driving over on the shoulder, it's risky with farm equipment, especially if you've got an implement behind the tractor, because now all of a sudden when a road sign or a mailbox comes up and you need to swerve back out onto the road, well, that creates a hazard for everybody. Now, I'm not saying that if there's a line of cars behind you and it is a safe spot to get over, that that's not courteous, because yeah, you could sure do that, but you're definitely not required to be over on the shoulder. You've got as much legal right to that road as anybody else. Now, there are some roads that have speed limits where you have to be at least a certain speed, like interstate highways, for example. You've got to be at least at a certain speed, and many farm tractors would not be able to do that. But you're talking about driving on county and possibly even state highways where you don't have those kinds of restrictions. So your legal right, the way I understand it, is you should be on that road. You can be on that road and you're legal to be there. And you're correct. It's illegal to pass anything in a non-passing zone. Thanks for the feedback. We appreciate that. And it's really good for our non-farm listeners, too, to understand some of those things that, hey, we're trying to do the right thing on the farm. And just like you said, you're going to another one of your farms. Well, it's probably just a mile or two down the road. It's better to just be patient rather than to do something risky out on the road, because farmers are generally off the road in just a couple of miles. All right, got to get some feedback here. This is from Brazil, from G. Massey. Says, great stuff, guys. I really like your videos and have learned a lot watching them. I'm in Brazil. I'm owning about 1,000 acres right now. My soil pH is around 4, and I've got about 20% clay in my soils. To raise my soil pH to a 6, it's going to cost me more than what I paid for the land, mainly due to the trucking cost. Hey, G, I appreciate that. It's expensive sometimes when you don't have a close lime source, but that doesn't mean it's the wrong thing to do in all cases. And maybe you don't get all the way to a 6 right away. Maybe you get it up to a 5 and then see what a difference it is. If I was farming where you're farming and you say, wow, trucking is really expensive, I'd probably get one load and see what we could do. I know you also have to haul some grain a long ways away. Maybe when those grain trucks come to your farm, you see, hey, what can we do here? If you're going to haul grain one way, can you haul me lime back? And getting that backhaul reduces the trucking expense all the way around. So that may be something that you do. The other thing I'd say is just get one load and see what it makes for a difference. Because how do you know that the trucking is too expensive? Maybe it's worth it. Maybe you end up spending, let's just say, for example, you spend $100 an acre on getting the lime there and getting it spread and everything else. But you can get $150 back in yield, or you can get $200 back in yield forever. Wow, that could be a great return on investment for you. So you just have to run those numbers on your farm and see. And maybe it is too expensive, but I've been to Brazil a couple of times, and yeah, I know what you mean. There's some great distances between supplies and fields that need them. But sometimes it's still worth the money, even though it's a big investment. So I would definitely take a look at it. Thanks for the feedback and appreciate you watching the videos. Got one from Thomas here, and Thomas is in Wisconsin. He said, I just want to thank you and your staff for your winter workshops. I got to attend one earlier here in Rochester, Minnesota. You guys go to the extreme, and you need to know how much myself and other farmers appreciate what you're doing. Hey, thanks a lot. We really appreciate that, Thomas. Yeah, we are doing quite a few meetings this winter once again. You can check out our full list of events coming up where Brian and I will be at agphd.com. Just click on the events tab. You can pre-register for any of the Ag PhD events. We'll also be at Commodity Classic coming up the end of February. I think we're February 28th and March 1st speaking at Commodity Classic in Orlando too. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more of your calls and questions after this.
In farming, there's a lot of variables out of our control. Don't let fertility be one of them. Let the experts at AgroLiquid move you closer to your bullseye. It's true. AgroLiquid fertilizers are formulated to keep nutrients available to your crop, and they have unmatched compatibility with other nutrients and crop protection products, which makes application more efficient than ever. But we also have the best people in the field, ready to talk about your operation, your goals. Go to agroliquid.com to move you closer to your target.
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say, Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic has proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer Amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean field, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer Amaranth. Take control of your soybean field and get rewarded with Roundup Ready Plus when you choose the proven power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at SoilWarrior.com.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'd love to hear from you if you have an agronomic question or a comment. We're talking about soil organic matter today and trying to build that. Had a couple of guests that we were going to have on that it just didn't work out for them to be on today, and that's unfortunate. I guess to wrap up the discussion on soil organic matter, the big things for me, reducing tillage has made such a huge difference on our farm. We're in general not no-till, but we've gone to quite a bit of strip tillage where we're only tilling just where we're going to be planting. And that's been a real positive for us. And the big part about that is we're trying to leave the root balls intact. And if we leave that root mass intact, that's really where we're seeing the growth in our soil organic matter levels. The residue that's on top of the ground, for the most part, the studies that I've seen have shown something like 1% of that ends up becoming soil organic matter eventually. So it's important to protect your soil from erosion and so forth. But it's not going to do much for you for building organic matter, the stuff that's underneath the ground. If we can leave those root systems intact, let them decompose naturally, that's the big gain. You know, planting high residue crops, we have in some of our fields gone to continuous corn rotation. I know there are some growers that have said wheat has been fantastic for them because it's got a lot of root system underneath it. Just planting crops with lots of root mass and lots of residue below ground are big choices for your farm. Manure and compost, we're using more manure and compost than we have in past years. We've always done a little bit. We used to have livestock. We don't have our own, but we're working with other livestock producers nearby to put manure and compost on our farms. Putting out beneficial soil microbes, we're doing that a lot. There are a number of products that we've talked about quite a bit on the show, products like Decomp we're using in furrow, and that's been really cool to see the root mass differences on our farm. And then using cover crops. It's something we haven't done enough of on our farm. And we're still using the excuse, well, we're not getting harvested in time to get things done. But we're certainly doing some experiments looking at, well, what could we do to get that seeded into a standing crop so we have a good cover crop establishment come fall. Guess we'll see. The jury's still out on our farm, but growers that are doing it around the country are seeing some gains in general, not every time, but overall are pretty happy with the whole cover crop practice. So it's something we'd encourage you to take a look at for your farm too. All right, got a question. This is from Levi. He said, when you talked about row cleaners on your show the other night, the video mentioned that sometimes in strip-till environments, you would see last year's residue still blow over the row that you had built in the fall. Now, assuming that you can't do anything about the residue that blows back in front of where you intend to plant, what are the implications of that happening? That is considering the residue is still loose and not stuck down. All right, Levi, we do see some residue blowing around in the winter, of course, because the wind doesn't always come out of the same direction and that kind of thing. But one of the things that we've done, we've put chopping corn heads on our combines. We're lifting them higher. So we're generally cutting about 18 inches up. So we leave some stalk standing 18 inches high, not super tall, but tall enough to catch a lot of the leaves and little pieces of stalk. And we see most of it concentrating around those areas and leaving our berms that we've built halfway in between our 30-inch rows pretty well clean. But we do have row cleaners on our planter to try to push away what little bit ends up on those berms. So generally not a big deal for us. We do see a little bit, but we want to get it out of the way because otherwise we see our gauge wheels bouncing up and down over that and our planting depth is compromised. So we want to make sure we've got a nice, even planting depth. That's going to be one of the most important factors for getting good yields on your farm, getting even emergence because you got even planting depth and spacing. Got a question from Carl. He says, I'm not going to be able to attend one of your winter workshops, but I'm interested what you have to say about seed treatments. Carl, thank you. We really appreciate the question. I wish we could see you at one of our workshops, but since we can't, we're putting a lot of information about seed treatments both in the Ag PhD Insider magazine and on Ag PhD TV and radio, so hopefully you catch some of that information too. With seed treatments, we're going to be putting more seed treatments on this year than ever. On corn, we're putting 33 different things on our seed. On soybeans, we're putting 36. So that sounds crazy, doesn't it? Wow, how are you doing that? Well, what we're doing is we're using a lot of beneficial microbes in addition to using even more fungicides and insecticide than we're seeing a lot of other standard seed treatments. And one of the big things for us has just been looking at what's going to make the impact on our emergence. And so we're finding some beneficial microbes that help with that and also help to really increase our root mass. And we're seeing some huge differences. That's something we'll be showing more video of on AgPhD TV and certainly talking about here on AgPhD Radio as well. You may look back at some of our previous radio episodes to hear exactly what we're doing, utilizing just a number of different beneficial fungi and bacteria. It's a really long list of things that are going on there. But I would say this, seed treatment usage is really, really important. I've seen some things out this year about guys trying to cut costs, and Brian and I are definitely talking about cutting costs at our workshops. Getting your seed off to a good start is one that I would not cut. It's much like with animals. We grew up on our farm. We had a cow-calf operation and a farrow-to-finish hog operation, and we saw if we had a pig or a calf that got behind and all the other animals got ahead of it, were growing faster, you just never caught up. If that little animal was sick, even just for a week or two, and got over it, he was just going to be behind the rest of the year. There was no way around that. So it's important for us with our seed to make sure that we're getting it up out of the ground and having healthy plants to start the season so they can better handle the stresses that are going to come along. So yeah, we're putting more on the seed treatment, and we're definitely not cutting seed treatment out of our program on our farm. Thanks a lot, Carl. Really appreciate the question. Got one from Curtis here, and he said, I'm farming down in Missouri. I'm interested in hearing your recommendations on some recent soil tests that we pulled for our farm. Hopefully you can help me excite the older generations on our farm. As a young farmer, I'd also be interested in your insights and suggestions on growing our farm operation. If you were to start over, how would you work to find rented ground, financing, etc.? Hey, Curtis, thanks a lot. You know, it's a little bit different in every area. I guess the big thing is when you're farming, to do a great job. And oftentimes when you're doing a great job, people notice that. And we've had a number of people that have asked us to farm some ground just because they've seen how well we're taking care of their neighbor's ground and our own ground. So that would be something to do. And I guess you can do more in your community to try to get your name out there and let people know the kind of work that you're doing on the farm. I've also seen some farmers taking technology to their advantage too, putting together little newsletters that they send out to friends and family and neighbors and landlords and that kind of thing to say, hey, here's what we're doing out on the farm, and just trying to communicate a little bit more. And that's been really attractive to landowners in their area too. All right, looking at your soil tests, for in general, and we've got a bunch here. We've got 60 different soil tests for those of you listening to the show. So there's quite a bit, but there's some pretty good similarities. So your soil pH is mostly in the sixes, and that's the first hurdle. And I would say you guys have hit that one pretty well. You may have a couple of zones that the pH is just a little bit too high, that's getting up into the low sevens or into the upper fives. But for the most part, your pH is good. Where I see you struggling is with your base saturation potassium. We're short. We're at about half of the minimum that we feel that we need in our farm. You're down around 2. We'd like to be around 4%. Your magnesium percentage is almost ideal. So really, your base saturation overall looks pretty good. And then I look at phosphorus. For the most part, you're pretty low on phosphorus. And I would try to get some more phosphorus out there. With your soil in the 15 to 20 cation exchange, for the most part, you've got a medium to heavy soil. You could certainly put broadcast applications out, till them in. You could use strip till and put fertilizer deep. That's what I would like to do if I had your ground. But there's a number of different ways to deliver phosphorus. And then don't forget about sulfur. Your sulfur parts per million are really low, and your micronutrients are low as well. So the good thing is, hey, you got pH right, and you got a lot of things in balance. Now you just got to deliver some more P and K and try and bring those micronutrient levels up to par as well, and you'll really have some highly productive ground. So I'm really excited for you, Curtis. Good luck here as you get rolling in your farming career. Thanks for listening to our program today. Really appreciate all the questions that we got sent in. We appreciate our guests that we had on the show. And we appreciate you listening. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio. Now, stay tuned for Rob Sharkey and Shark Farmer Radio.